KVON Napa, 1440 AM and KVON.com.
Broadcasting live from South Napa Century Center.
Vintage Sotheby's International Realty, Napa's only locally owned and operated Sotheby's Realty office, has an amazing team of experienced and knowledgeable agents that exceed the high standards and qualifications to assure the ultimate goal of assisting clients buying or selling homes throughout the entire Napa Valley and beyond. Whether now or sometime in the future, remember to consider Vintage Sotheby's Realty, the luxury brand with the local focus that you deserve for any real estate matters. Visit VintageSotheby'sRealty.com to connect when it makes sense for you, or call 707-944-0888. That's 707-944-0888. DRE number 01874685.
Introducing a new and unique source of accessory dwelling units. HabitatADU.com is an all-in-one ADU builder who makes the entire process convenient and actually fun. The new statewide ADU building codes means more properties can accommodate them. Choose from 9 pre-designed models of varying size, built off-site, and delivered nearly 100% complete in much less time than traditional methods. Leave all the permit process and management of the project to the team at HabitatADU.com. Find out if you might benefit from an accessory dwelling unit on your property at HabitatADU.com.
Narvaez Insurance Services brings you 40 years of combined experience to protect small businesses. As an independent brokerage, Narvaez Insurance Services selects the most appropriate coverage for the best value for any insurance need from different insurance carriers. Business liability, workers' comp, umbrella policies for maximum protection, and of course, auto, home, renters insurance. Also offering DMV services for your title transfers and renewing registration. With Narvaez Insurance Services, you can avoid the long lines at the DMV. Contact Narvaez Insurance Services for a competitive quote by calling 707-927-3204. Give Bernie Narvaez a call at 707-927-3204.
It's time for All Things Napa with your host, Lee W. Miller, a community leader, full-time realtor, and a serial networker passionate about promoting local businesses. Let's learn what's new in the Napa business scene today.
Question for some as to what you do and what is different about it. And then we'll get into some more nitty gritty.
Sure. Yeah. Thanks, Lee. So quick background on me, one of the founding account executives at Habitat ADU and really a native to the Bay Area, born and raised in Sonoma County. And I've been in the modular home design and premium prefab construction space really for a number of years. I was with a company called Blue Homes for a long time, and really proud to be a part of a lot of rebuild efforts after the Sonoma and Napa County 2017-2018 wildfires. Mm-hmm. I've done some work with a design-build firm out of San Diego who also did premium prefab scattered lot home developments. But really, in the last year or so, been thrilled to turn my focus to something that I believe is really one of the hottest focuses in the construction world right now, which is accessory dwelling units. So I partnered up, really Habitat found me about a year ago as they were growing this company out of the Presidio and just had this vision of making it easier, more affordable, more attainable, an all-in package for folks to build accessory dwelling units really easier than it's ever been done before. So Habitat really came to be out of a few things. One of the, there was sweeping legislation in 2019 that went into effect in 2020. So that gave us the green light to really start rapidly growing and have consistent guidelines now across all of California to build accessory dwelling units. Before it was just local municipalities kind of putting blockers up, making it expensive. So when we heard about this new legislative laws coming into effect, you know, that mixed with a severe need for more homes, low interest rates, and now the pandemic of people are thinking about their spaces a little differently, it's been a nice recipe to be a part of Habitat and really starting to make a change for the housing industry with accessory dwelling units.
Let's talk about that legislation for a minute, and then I want to cover the different types of ADUs. So the legislation that you're talking about, you can fill in probably more of the details for us, but it is not federal, it's statewide, but it took what was being done on a county by county and in some instances city by city, and all of those regulations were different, and then it just put a blanket over all of them. And the main thing that it covered was allowing homeowners that may not be zoned in the old laws, whether or not that they could add an ADU. But also the setbacks from property lines were different. There's been some reductions in the fees and things of that nature. What are some of the other things that that legislation brought forth?
Yeah, you nailed it on a lot of those. And a big part of that was those setbacks being changed from a varying degree of 5 to 15 feet off of the sides and rear of the property. And that's been reduced now to only 4 feet across California. And in some areas like San Jose, you can go actually a zero setback.
Oh, wow.
So it really changes the buildable area on folks' property. Another one that they added was they took away the impact fees. So less permit cost, which was quite a bit of money to spend if you're trying to just build a small ADU. And they took that away if you're building anything less than 750 square feet. So there's definitely a threshold there. If you know you want a two-bedroom, two-bath home, though, and it's going to be at least 800 square feet and you have the space, I'd argue to look at even larger homes because the permit cost, site development is going to be about the same.
Right. It's interesting. 750 square feet. Some people are thinking, well, that's really small. You know, I've sold single-family homes to buyers as a realtor as their primary home at 750.
Right.
So it's not, it just depends on the need. If it's a couple empty nesters or something of that nature, 750 is fine for them. So, but
exactly.
Like you say, a reduced fees if you stay under 750, or is it under 800?
It's under, there's a couple different ones there. Under 750 is the no impact fees. It's about a $20,000 jump to in permit cost after everything's all said and done. But part of the sweeping consistent guidelines across California is now it is your right to build up to 800 square feet as an ADU before you have the local, maybe a design review or planning department start to interact or ask for things to be changed or a different roofing or different siding. So it's your right to build up to 800 square feet as long as you meet those setbacks.
Okay. And speaking of setbacks, we introduced this topic as a unifying and standardization, and then you said, but in San Jose, you can go zero lot line. So mm-hmm. Are there other high-density populations in the state of California that have that exception and they don't even have to have the 4-foot setback from the property line?
Yeah, and it varies. It does. You know, state law still takes precedence, which is why, you know, Habitat's able to host webinars that are all California focused now. And that's been a fairly new thing because before it was too broad or too general of a topic for you to really be able to speak to what people could do. But yeah, you definitely have a few different options when it comes to the size and the setbacks of what you can build. And in some counties, you can build, about 3 counties, you can build 1,500 square foot ADUs.
Oh, wow.
There's a difference in between Napa and Sonoma County even. You have a limit of your accessory dwelling unit, whether it's attached or detached to the home. Habitat focuses on those detached units. You can build up to the square footage of the primary residence. So you are capped to the primary residence's square footage. However, in Sonoma County, you can just go, you can surpass that and go up to 1,200. So, for example, we have a showroom coming really soon. It's there. We're just getting it ready for tours and finalizing the design, interior design, and getting it ready for tours. But that's a 1,200 square foot home on a on a property that has an 853 square foot primary residence, two bedroom, one bath residence.
Whoa, the old flip flop. Not putting a smaller one, but maybe the owners of that property will move into the 1200 and rent out the 850 or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah, we're seeing that all over the place.
Actually, we're seeing as well people contacting us about older folks that have owned their homes for a long time. This whole thing's kind of come out of Prop 19, but
right.
They have been saying, "Hey, you know, we want to rent our property out or whatever, but we don't want to live in our 2,500 square foot home anymore. We're going to build an ADU or have Habitat do that for them and then move into that unit and rent the front."
You know, what's interesting about that is our nationwide, but especially in California, housing shortage. Prop 19 was supposed to, and certainly still will, kind of break up the logjam a little bit by allowing people who are empty nesters and they've been in their home for 40 years, they don't want to sell it because then they will have to pay way higher property taxes even if they downsize because of the basis not transferring with them. So Prop 19 was going to break that up, but now with ADUs, they go, okay, I still don't have to sell. I can now rent out my 2,500 square foot and move into my ADU.
It just gives them options.
Right.
Okay, so that's the best part about that is the options part. And so because some people, if, you know, they've been there 40 years, say, to your example, and they don't want the hassle of renting and they don't want to have anybody living right next to them, they can sell and move on, and then they can move their tax basis, which is a good thing.
Sure.
You know, certainly.
And it probably makes good economic sense for them to build the ADU and then sell. And
it certainly brings
it
in
higher.
A lot of value.
Yeah.
There's no question about it. And, you know, we talked about this last time we were on that, you know, we have recently been able to do projections of value, you know, like a CMA comparative market analysis of what a house would be with and without an ADU. So if somebody says, hey, you know, can you say, or what's my house worth? And then what's it worth if I add this on?
Right.
And I got to tell you, I think that there's a lot of value in that. And you've probably seen that a lot, haven't you?
Right. We look at the gross rent multiplier quite a bit.
Yeah.
And that is a good way to look at the value of it. There's just not enough comps out there right now to say, yes, you'll make money off of day one if you build it and then sell the property. But you have to look at it's a new construction, nice finishes and fixtures. What is a two bedroom, two bath home rent for, you know, off of First Street in someone's backyard? It's still going to be very comparable to other two bedroom, two bath homes out there in the market that are single family dwellings.
Absolutely. All right. So we're talking about the economic benefits and things of that nature. If someone's not familiar with accessory dwelling unit as a term, ADU as the acronym, go ahead and give us the different types pretty quickly.
Sure. Yeah. It's just a level set on that fun acronym. It's, you know, they've been called casitas and second units before granny flats.
Units, yeah.
So it's the state legislation has actually called it now, coined the term of accessory dwelling unit. And that's really anything that has provisions for cooking, living, and sleeping that is on your property that's secondary to the primary home. So they come in a few different forms and fashions. One is detached accessory dwelling unit, typically at least 6 feet away from the primary residence, ideally 10 feet away from the primary. You have an attached accessory dwelling unit. That's more or less a renovation. And you have to think, okay, how long is it going to take me to do a two bedroom, one bath addition to my primary home right now? And that's really what you're comparing. But still maybe a good idea if you just don't have the space for a 600 or 700 square foot detached ADU because of those setbacks, then that could be a really good option for you.
And those are required to have a separate ingress and egress so they don't go through the primary home.
Right, yes. Versus a junior ADU or a JADU does have to have an egress into the primary residence. That's a new one as of a couple years ago. Started coming into the scene around 2019, and they cap that at 500 square feet, so you can't build out from that. Another interesting thing about the junior ADU is that you cannot rent that unless you live on the property, either in a detached ADU or the primary residence. Whereas you could, if you had a detached ADU on a rental property, that was one of those new laws that changed, is you can now rent out a primary residence and that detached accessory dwelling unit and not have to occupy. And that's grandfathered in, and you're good to go for the foreseeable future. But it does, that one has a time limit, expires 2025, which sounded like a long time ago, or sounded like a long time not too long ago. And now we're about three years plus out.
So, okay, we've covered a few things, but I think the most significant topic that we've got to address is, what is different about HabitatADU.com versus any other source that someone might opt for to build an ADU on their property?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Lee.
Just like rehearsed.
Yeah, I mean, this is what I get to speak to all day long, of just comparing standard construction, other prefab companies that I've worked with in the past, of what all that takes. And really, it involves, the sum of it is that you are either going to be your own project manager, having to delegate and reach out to several subs or several specialists along the way over the course of this design and permit submittal, approvals and changes. It's like, who does that? So it can be, they've made it more simple to build ADUs in California, but the big differentiator between anybody else out there and Habitat is that we are doing it all in-house now. So we are your designer. We already have state-approved floor plans. We are standing in line at the permit office for you. We are getting you through the planning and building department. We are building the home. We are your general contractor, and we are installing the home, getting all through inspections and handing you the keys at the end of the process. And we think we can't be beat on time and on cost. We even have several general contractors who we are building accessory dwelling units for on their primary residence, because
wow,
the project management side of it alone and the time that it would spend to do that is a very huge value to them to not have to do. It's something that's not reflected in a price per square foot in common construction.
And that is so key, because I'm sure there's plenty of people who have considered building an ADU, and then they walk away from the thought based on the need for them to manage it.
Right. We like to say, what's a year of your life worth to you?
We should probably know that very well over the last year, actually. Because, you know, where I think that's, you know, everyone's looking at themselves in the mirror on that question for sure.
Right. And just, and everyone's looking at how they live on their properties, and, you know, the technology has indefinitely allowed people to work from home and even have schooling from home, remote schooling. So definitely a need for additional space. It's kind of interesting. There's a lot of different demographics who are building, but over the course of the lifetime of the ADU and that property, you could see anything from, you know, aging parents to adult children, investors, and aging in place. All of that could be, you could have those use cases across the board over the life of that home.
You know, and certainly that expediting of the overall time frame and not having to lift a finger, although I suppose the client does have to lift a finger up far enough to click on the image of whichever one they choose. That's the effort.
Right.
Then you take it from there. I simplify that a little bit, but it's only going to get easier, because the more ADUs that you put up in California, I would imagine planning departments, building departments are going to, oh, this is another Habitat ADU project. Mm-hmm. Rubber stamp, rubber stamp, rubber stamp.
They're getting their reps in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you speak to the aesthetics of these units as they relate to the house itself? Because I think a lot of people struggle with that part, and I just wanted you to cover that.
Yeah, thanks for asking. The world went really modern, you know, 5-10 years ago, and everything just needed to be straight lines and squares and shipping containers and long overhangs and, you know, floor-to-ceiling windows. And we're starting to see those out and about. And unless it's really done right, it does stand out. It is a little bit of a monstrosity at times to have some big square structure on a property that's, you know, an older Victorian primary dwelling. So we, in prefab, you definitely have to be aware of, can you change these designs and how are they going to be cohesive with the rest of the property? And the good news is you can redact the siding from the factory and you can do your own custom siding. You can do stucco siding. You can change the, there's a couple different roof line options. You can do a shed style roof. You can do clear story windows. You can do, we could do tile roofing. So there's a lot of options that you can do, you know, within some relative limitations, but we can get pretty close to making it.
You probably don't have a Victorian style, would be.
Right. Well, you'd be surprised at some of the siding options that we have. They're more of a contemporary cottage is what we call it. And that one is fairly close to a Victorian.
So like a shiplap, you know, I'm motioning to him with my hands as if the audience can visualize that what I'm saying.
So, you know, if you needed to do a standing seam metal roof, you could do something like that. Modern farmhouse is obviously really popular. There's definitely ways to make it your own. But again, it's a house and it's pretty easy to overdesign it. And do you want to put a $30,000 standing seam metal roof on a 600 square foot structure that's kind of in the back corner of your property that's tilted and maybe you barely see it?
Right.
You know, so we think we're in a really good sweet spot between design, cost, and time. And that's really where the industry hasn't seen much of. There's a lot of folks out there building ADUs, but it's on you to do the permit. It's on you to do project management, figure out grading, figure out your septic line. Do I have a 2% drop on my sewer main, or do I have to get a sump pump? Do I have to get a site survey? Do I have to get a topo map? You know, do I have to get a civil?
Stop. Like, yeah. I can't take it anymore.
Right.
Stop.
You hear all of these things and you just, people do still need help in some direction, or they just spend too much money and time on things they don't need to do.
We're talking to Ryan Modlin of Habitat ADU and Kelly Norris, broker owner of Vintage Sotheby's. We're going to be right back to find out where you can learn more, where there's a showroom, things of that nature. So stay with us.
KVON Napa, 1440 AM and KVON.com.
Broadcasting live from South Napa Century Center.
Vintage Sotheby's International Realty, Napa's only locally owned and operated Sotheby's Realty office, has an amazing team of experienced and knowledgeable agents that exceed the high standards and qualifications to assure the ultimate goal of assisting clients buying or selling homes throughout the entire Napa Valley and beyond. Whether now or sometime in the future, remember to consider Vintage Sotheby's Realty, the luxury brand with the local focus that you deserve for any real estate matters. Visit VintageSotheby'sRealty.com to connect when it makes sense for you, or call 707-944-0888. That's 707-944-0888. DRE number 01874685.
Narvaez Insurance Services brings you 40 years of combined experience to protect small businesses. As an independent brokerage, Narvaez Insurance Services selects the most appropriate coverage for the best value for any insurance need from different insurance carriers. Business liability, workers' comp, umbrella policies for maximum protection, and of course, auto, home, renters insurance. Also offering DMV services for your title transfers and renewing registration. With Narvaez Insurance Services, you can avoid the long lines at the DMV. Contact Narvaez Insurance Services for a competitive quote by calling 707-927-3204. Give Bernie Narvaez a call at 707-927-3204.
All righty, we are back with Ryan Modlin and Kelly Norris. All right, Ryan, so Let's see here. People may have, they're chomping at the bit. They want to learn more. They want to see it, feel it, and touch it. They're not satisfied with just what we're covering here on the radio. How might they get in touch with you, and where might they be able to go to see and touch and feel an ADU?
Right. You've got to be able to shut the door and jump up and down sometimes in order to feel like you can make a decision about something. That's definitely, you want to feel the materials. You want to look at the quality of the home. We've got a showroom actually in Oakland. It's kind of close to the 580. And that's part of my tour is I open the door. You can hear a little bit of background freeway noise. And then I have the customer shut the door and it just whoosh, nice and quiet.
So you chose that location intentionally to demonstrate the incredible soundproofness.
Yeah.
Man, that is a lot of forethought going into that. I tip my hat to your marketing people.
Yeah. So that was Vivian, and Vivian was one of our first clients, and she's been willing to rent out her house to us over the next, you know, few months as we get our showroom going in Santa Rosa. But kind of the big exciting news that's new to us is that we just opened a showroom in Burbank, California. And that is a really cool 550 square foot, two bedroom, one bath home that's all decked out. And we are just starting to do tours now in Southern California. So not particularly interesting for folks in the North Bay. However, we are growing across California, and that's showrooms, just being able to see tours, Matterport software, and be able to walk through some of these homes that are finished is really important.
Yeah. Phone number, or do you just want to direct them to habitatadu.com?
Sure. Yeah. Habitatadu.com is a great place to start. My email directly is ryan@habitatadu.com. I am the North Bay Senior Account Executive, and I have a team of that we work with just for Napa, Sonoma, and Marin counties to build. We're kind of like our own small construction company within a larger company. And we are rocking and rolling with dozens of projects across all counties. So feel free to reach out to me. And we also are doing a special, only $250 for a project assessment. And that's really giving you a not to exceed number for the build, the design. You get a site visit, you get a kickoff call, you get our whole team working with you to really bring your conceptual thoughts to life in this, what we call a project assessment. So special for listeners.
Wow, that's significant.
It is.
Because that's a lot of resources that you're bringing to that site assessment. And I guess it normally is not $250. So.
Right. Yeah, it's usually $1,000. And even that is a pretty good deal. It's still refundable for any reason, but we just don't have the bandwidth to do tons of these. So we do have to charge something initially. But yeah, that's a great way to get it out of your mind and put it onto paper and really learn what building an ADU would look like for your property. So we're happy to work with you. Again, Ryan, R-Y-A-N, at habitatadu.com. Feel free to contact me anytime. And as they say in the real estate industry, I'm never too busy for referrals.
Yeah, that's in 50% of realtors' email signatures. Kelly Norris, broker owner of Vintage Sotheby's. Let's talk about the market.
It's been an interesting little bit. Ever since kind of the initial shutdown in the pandemic, things have gotten increasingly tight for inventory. We still see that buyers are challenged because they're having to look for the property that's,
They look and they find and then lose.
They have 15 other people that are,
And they look and find and lose again. So,
right. That's, it's an issue. And, and a lot of the questions are that I get daily from not only my agents, but buyers and sellers is that, are things to the point where we're in a bubble, in a real estate bubble?
Right, because we are at an all-time high of property values. And anytime we get into that area, just I think it's human nature. People say, well, this can't keep going. Certainly it's going to crash.
Well, and it has in the past. And honestly, it's we're in a better position now than we were back in 7 and 8. There's no question about that. Just complete different dynamics in the market.
Explain the difference with the subprime.
Yeah, so subprime in 2000, almost at 19, it'll take me back a few more years. Yeah. Well, I you know, I've been in this for a long time. But anyway, so 2007, mid-7, and then into 2008, over 85% of the market was subprime. And so, and what that meant was that if you had a heartbeat or you could fog a mirror, you could get a loan. Okay, so... and so that flooded
ninja loans, they call them.
Yeah.
No income, no job approved.
No documentation, nothing.
Right. You know?
So, I mean, people were, there were people that were part-time workers that were doing no-doc loans, and they would own two or three homes. And then that created this massive, you know, basically the market was just primed to fail.
Right.
And it finally did.
Kind of a house of cards.
Yeah, it did. And then all of a sudden, so the market corrected, and it honestly needed to correct because, you know, it's that was an unsustainable situation. Now, you compare that now, and less than 0.1% is subprime. So we don't have those, you know, it feels like the market is topping, but it's actually probably not. It's probably extended, not necessarily extended, but we'll probably see some flatlining as we see the pandemic kind of start to come to a close over the next year, because people will become more, you know, they'll want to put their house on the market and they don't have to worry about people traipsing through their home that may or may not have COVID.
Right. And that's a good factor as far as why we have such low inventory, because all the normal circumstances that necessitate people to downsize or upsize or divorce or death or anything that typically triggers a real estate transaction, there are so many sellers that don't want people that might have COVID coming through their houses, and so we have zero inventory.
It's an interesting dynamic. So we have, you take the pandemic, that's one. So one is they say, okay, I don't feel comfortable with people that might have COVID coming through my home. Number two is if I sell or if a seller sells, where do I go? And so they're going, you know, there's nothing on the market. So it's exacerbating the problem of the first problem, which is the COVID pandemic. So we're starting to see that loosen up a little bit. Of course, going through the winter, it was a little strange, and the things our inventory drops during that time anyway, and then you just add this dynamic on there and it just becomes even more of a problem. So our inventory right now is really, really low. It's actually probably, I'd say, in a 50-year low percentage-wise for any county. Now, our county is definitely feeling that for sure. But we also see as things, you know, just like today, we have another beautiful day at our office in Yountville. People are just out. They're just itching to get out. And we see people walking up and down the street. Everybody has their masks on. They're being socially separated. They're doing all those things they need to do, but they are ready to get out. I think that's a precursor to what we're going to see in the real estate market as soon as people feel more comfortable. Sure. And confident. And we're starting to see that. But I can definitely say from a bubble standpoint, to kind of circle back to that whole idea, I don't think that we're in a bubble as far as need. I think the need is there. It's a matter of fact, the buyers to sellers is so out of whack right now. There's so many buyers for every seller. It's just one-sided. I definitely see as things materialize in the listing and the for sale section improves, that we'll probably see more of an equilibrium happen on that. You know, it's economics 101, but I can definitely see, I don't see it falling off a shelf, but I can tell you that the buyers are driving those prices up because they're competing against other buyers. Once we get more inventory, we should see a settling of that.
Sure. Talk about, I lost my train of thought. When you're hosting a show, you're not supposed to do that.
It's okay. I got a question.
Good.
Yes, please.
Yes. You in the back. It's your turn.
I think that what I've seen, and just I'm big into real estate. I think when you open Google on my on a new tab, I think Zillow is probably the second or third most common hit website. So I'm still active in it, and I love to do some research. But you know, there was a lot of even shows on HGTV that are people leaving California and going to Oregon, Washington, Texas. How do you think the recent weather across the entire nation and even wildfires in Oregon and Washington will, do you think that's going to be a reset of people's mind of, hey, everyone has issues, and you'll just continue to see Sonoma and Napa County becoming still some of the most desirable places to live in the world in the long term?
That's a great question.
Actually, I can answer it a little bit.
Because he used to live in the Midwest.
I did, and I certainly don't miss the 14 below zero wind chill factors and all that stuff. So I can definitely tell you that if someone is moving out of California or any place and trying to find some place that you don't have natural disasters, good luck.
Right.
It's just not going to happen. There's no such thing as that.
Just a pick your poison type of thing.
Right. I mean,
some people are terrified of the idea of being in an earthquake, whereas other people wouldn't dream of wanting to be anywhere near a hurricane and
or a tornado
and everything else. Yeah.
And right now, I mean, the people that moved to Texas realize that, you know, Mother Nature is in control 100% of the time. And if she wants to give you 14 below zero temperatures, yeah, it's going to happen. And there's nothing you can do. They were basically unprepared down there because it's an anomaly. It's happened actually in the past. As a matter of fact, before I moved to California 10 or 12 years ago, 2 years in a row we had ice storms, 12 below zero, 10 below zero, and we were out of power for 10, 12 days.
Wow.
Right?
And can you imagine being an agent that wants a sign in front of a house and you just have to postpone that for several weeks,
what's
right?
What's really odd is during that time, being a real estate agent or broker in an area where you have that sort of thing happen, you don't need a pandemic for everything to shut down.
Right.
It just, you know, and a tornado is probably some of the most incredible devastation I've ever witnessed in my entire life. I mean, it'll take, like Joplin, Missouri, which was about 70 miles from where I'm originally from, basically got wiped out. You know, it was a tornado, and if you can put this in your mind, it was basically 3 miles wide.
Wow.
And it was an F5 tornado, and basically nothing can survive that. Nothing. It actually, there's a hospital there that's eight stories tall and moved 6 feet off the foundation. So, I mean, so, you know, listen, the moral to that story is, you know, you can't move away from Mother Nature. She's going to find you eventually. You know, we have earthquakes here, but you know, 99% of the time we're in an amazing spot, and I couldn't be, you know, we'll never move back to the Midwest. Not saying that it's not a great place to live. It is, but we would prefer the weather here.
Right.
You know, we have to deal with, you know, we were here during the earthquake in 14, and that was definitely, you know,
welcome to California.
Oh, yeah. But that being said, I think that people are reassessing, but to kind of come back to your question, what it is they're trying to move away or to. And at the end of the day, we live in an amazing spot. And so I think there's a lot of that, you know, readjustment in their mindset about what I want to do to get away from. And, you know, in my particular life, I'm, you know, if they don't grow grapes, I'm probably not going to move anywhere somewhere, you know, unless it's Tuscany.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, you don't have to live near the grapes to drink the wine.
That's true. But I actually like the way they look, too. And, you know, and we have our own grapes in the ground. So I really like that part of it. I think that there's some, you know, readjustment going on, especially with the recent events. So you know, you hear about the people leaving California for one reason or another. But we also have a lot of people moving to California as well. So I think it's equaling out a bit. So, but I want to circle back also on, before we were talking about the whole bubble thing and then going back into, I wanted to make sure I had some things I wanted to talk about today about how buyers and sellers need to to the mindset that they need to have in this market, because buyers are it's a challenging time, and they get out and they get frustrated, and they get, there's, to your point earlier, Lee, is that you said that people will, you know, they put an offer in and then they get 16 offers in, unless you're, you know, X amount over asking, you're not going to get it, or if you're all cash or whatever. And that can deter anyone, but they need to stay positive about it. They need to be in there, because these, you know, over the winter months, it's worse every year. It's not just this time. It seems like it is, but we've been through this year after year after year. In the wintertime, you have less inventory, and buyers are always more prevalent in the winter than sellers. I'll come back to sellers in a minute, but buyers just need to be diligent. They need to be very conscious about what they want in a house. They don't need to be willy-nilly going around, hey, you know, just like look at all these different houses.
This is pretty.
Yeah, this is pretty. This is really nice. What they need to do is they need to know exactly what they want. And when they do find it, they need to act upon it. And they don't need to wait. And they need to, you know, but they don't need to be like, you know, driving around and seeing 900 houses when they know that they aren't going to be interested in them.
Well, you've been doing this long enough. I'm coming in at 7 years now, and you know how often a buyer says, this is what I want, X, Y, and Z, and then they end up seeing an A, B, C, and go, this is the one. And he's like, what? But it doesn't, no, this is the one. I don't care what I said before.
That's true. And a lot of that stems from, you know, if, you know, there's no question that somebody could walk in and go, I don't want a three or a two-story house. I just want one story. And they walk in and they go, I love it, I'll take it.
Right.
That does happen. But at the same time, that happens more during a buyer's market, because there's just not enough available, so they're settling. So the whole idea is that, you know, listen, you want to look at the pictures. You want, there's so much more video and pictures and Matterport now, where you can really become you know, in tune with what you're going to see before you see it, more than ever before. But they definitely have to have an idea about what they want when they walk in, and get pre-qualified prior to that whole thing, so that if they walk in and they go, you know, this is it, I'm going to take it, regardless of what it looks like, they need to be ready. And a lot of them aren't, you know. So, but they definitely need to have that in mind, and they also need to be open to, you know, what I always say is that if you find 80% of what you're looking for, you probably found it. You know, you're not going to find it all.
That's how I approach women as well. And that's, you know.
Well, yeah, all relationships are that way.
Right.
You know, even the friends you choose, it's like, I'm not really crazy about that characteristic of that guy, but all right, he's other than that, he's all right. So,
sure. Yeah.
On the sellers, on the
flip
side. Oh,
your wife's not listening. I mean, yeah. She would be the exception. She meets all criteria.
All right? Of it. Yep. Yeah, you're yeah. Right. Thank you.
So on the flip side of that, on the seller's side, it's important that they, you know, the problem with sellers is that they inherently try to time the market. They go, oh, I'm going to wait till the spring, and I'm going to come on in the spring. Well, they're trying to time the market, and then they're going to be upset, because as the inventory and the sellers start equaling buyers, value is going to go down because you have more to choose from. And then what happens typically is they come on at a number back when it, you know, it was February or January, when they were only person on the market, and now all of a sudden they have 10 houses they can compete with. And then the first thing that happens is if it doesn't sell in 5 days, they blame their real estate agent.
Right.
Okay. No, they need to blame themselves, because they missed their opportunity. Right now is actually the best time for a seller to go on the market, because there's less to compete with. And it's I've never actually seen a better time in my entire career, 30 plus years, of a seller, you know, and then you look at them as going, we're going to wait till April. It's that way all the time. And what they don't understand is they're just throwing themselves out there at the wrong possible time. If I were a seller right now, which I'm not, but if I were, I would put it on now, because you literally will get 10 times the amount of buyers through your home than you would otherwise. I know that's counterintuitive. It seems counterintuitive, but it's true.
Right. Well, and it should be reiterated that there are safety protocols in place that realtors need to follow, and they sanitize before going in.
And going out.
And the agent wipes down every surface that was touched. There's only two people plus the agent in any home for any showing at any one time. So, you know, we're doing the best that we can in that regard, and I think it's working. If it wasn't working, it'd be all over the news that somebody got the vid because some, you know, their house was on the market and people came in. So, you know, there are no reports of anything like
that.
No,
and I can definitely tell you, I mean, from a couple of, you know, standpoints is that one is it's nice to be able, if a real estate agent calls you and you've got a listing and they say, hey, I've got a buyer that wants to see your home, and they go through the whole painstaking process of getting this PEED form signed, which is a coronavirus entry disclosure form. If they're going to do that, they're going to show up to the appointment, and then you actually can know they're going to do well. And then
further qualified buyer.
Yeah, fully qualified buyer. And then all of a sudden, and also I tell my agents, it's like, just counsel your buyers to keep their hands in their pockets while you're walking through the house. You don't need to open drawers. You don't need to do any of that stuff. Just walk through the house with your hands in your pockets. That way you don't have to go back and clean anything because you're not touching anything.
Right.
Except for the doorknobs and stuff, you have to open and close the doors and whatnot. But the reality of it is that, you know, you can be smart, and then if they want to act upon the house and they want to put an offer in, then during that inspection process of 17 days, then they can go in, they can open up all the drawers, they can, you know, do whatever they want. They can just really dig hard. But during the initial showing, there's no reason to do that.
Sure.
Yeah.
And part of the reason, I just want to reiterate, the supply is going to be increased coming probably late March, early April, is because as more and more people are vaccinated, sellers are already starting to feel a little bit more mm-hmm. comfortable. Not to mention, it's just that normal time of the year. It's getting close to the end of the school year. More people are willing to go ahead and put their houses on the market. So that's the reason why it's going to increase the supply going forward.
Yeah, we're going to see an uptick in supply as we always do during this time of year. But I think we're going to see it speed up quite a bit as people, as to your point, I saw a news article yesterday that if you combine the amount of people that have been vaccinated with the people that have already had the COVID virus and have built up the antibody, we're probably talking about one third of the nation already. So we're, you know, that's a good statistic. That means that we're kind of cresting, I would say. And plus, if you look at the amount of new cases hitting the country right now, it's fallen precipitously over the last month. I think 77% down, which is really good. That's going to make people feel better about going onto the market. So if you're a buyer in this market right now, you need to stay hyper-focused as things hit, because you're going to have a short window to act. So get ready. And if you are interested in the property that you're looking at with your real estate professional, and it fits 80% of what you're looking for, you need to be ready. Because if you can act quickly, you can avoid the multiple offer situation, and contact your real estate agent and get, you know, some more guidance on that. But I can definitely say, if you see something, don't wait till next Friday to see it, because it's going to be gone. You know, it's just going to happen. It's not going to flip the switch and then all of a sudden we have enough inventory for every buyer. It's just not going to happen. So you just need to be ready.
And if you don't have a realtor, contact me or VintageSotheby'sRealty.com, and we'll be sure to take care of you. So we're just about out of time, but I wanted to cover the multiple offer situation. More and more, if you are a seller, first of all, you want to make sure that you get all of the inspections done in advance so that the buyer doesn't necessarily have their inspection time and using those inspections to negotiate a price. So that's really key. But also, one thing I'm a little concerned about is when a listing comes on and the agent says, we're going to review offers on such and such a date, that, in, you know, just based on nature of the beast, it does create multiple offer situations. And then you might win the bid, but if there's no inspections done, don't be tempted to remove the inspection contingency. It's just too risky. That's why all the more important the seller and the listing agent should be providing all of those inspections to give a buyer the confidence to go ahead and say, look, I see a pest report. I see a whole home inspection. I see a roof inspection. All of these different things have been covered. Therefore, I can go in and be a little bold and remove the inspection contingency with the offer. You still have your appraisal and your loan contingency unless you're paying cash.
There's no question that sellers put themselves in a better position if they do all those things up front. And then a buyer can come in and remove those contingencies going in if they're provided those reports. However, I always tell my agents to, even though you're removing the contingencies, to go ahead and have an independent inspection done if you feel so inclined. And the reason why is because there's no, just like an appraiser, one appraisal will find one value, another appraisal will find another value. One inspector will find a bunch of things wrong, and another one won't. So there's got to be some happy medium in there. So I always like to have someone independent that's paid by me or paid by the buyer to be able to say, you know, your money's well spent because I'm going to give you my due diligence too, not just what the seller provided. All that does is, even though you remove the contingency, it still allows a buyer to know, if I'm going to take possession of this home, which has been lived in, has issues and I want to know. And do they have to do that? No, they certainly do not have to. They can save that money if they want. But they just because they remove the contingency, I think it's important that people know that they're not removing their ability to do what they need to do if they want to, right, to do an inspection.
Yeah, and even after they move in, if it provides them peace of mind to have that inspection, just to know what issues might exist with the home.
Right, and it also brings up this topic of having a home warranty, which is, you know, supplies, you know, that a peace of mind for someone on all their appliances and issues that may come up after they take possession.
Wow, that was a really fast hour. Ryan, thank you for being here, HabitatADU.com. Kelly, thank you very much.
It's a pleasure.
Pleasure.
Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, remember to live each day of your life as if your legacy matters.
KVON Napa, 1440 AM and KVON.com.
Broadcasting live from South Napa Century Center.